This is a regular meeting of the San Juan County Public Hospital District Number 1 Board of Commissioners. It is Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. It's 5:31, and this is our regular meeting held remotely under COVID-19 emergency rules. For the public, they can call in to listen at 509-824-1884 and enter 267-117-776#. We'll call us to order, and I'll have Mr. Butler do roll call, please.
Yes, let's see. Commissioner Clary?
Present.
Present. Let's see. Commissioner Lehman?
Present.
Commissioner Lindstrom?
Present.
Commissioner Lachine Seitz?
Present.
And Commissioner Loring?
Here. Good evening.
Let's see. We also have Superintendent Hutchins.
Here.
And I'm Nathan Butler, and we have as a guest Administrator Evan Paralaz. You want to go ahead and say hello, Evan, just so for the recording, so people
hello. Can yes. Your Evan, present. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Everyone's present and accounted for.
Okay, we're going to have Evan talk about the first grant, but before we do that, we need to approve the consent agenda. We need to just amend that because the August 26, 2020 regular meeting minutes, we need to defer today because they're not quite ready. So if I could hear a motion to amend the agenda and approve it, I would appreciate it.
I make a motion to amend and approve the agenda.
I second the motion.
I will second that. Okay, go ahead.
Everett's got a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, consent agenda approved as amended. And we'll hand this over to you, Evan.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to speak to you guys today and update you a little bit on our very exciting project that we've recently undertaken. You probably will get to see me just about every month, I imagine, for the next 3 years, but we'll see how you guys do with that. Just kind of as a quick background, back when LifeCare closed its doors, we were faced with a future of uncertainty and concern regarding our lack of viable long-term care options. As such, a task force was formed to explore kind of blue sky ideas about what we could create, what exactly was needed to secure a more promising future for our vulnerable population. In all of these meetings, a theme was formed around creating new opportunities and methodologies for the recreation of skilled nursing care and supporting services. When our task force concluded, it was decided that more information and data was required to really delve into cost, oversight, ownership, and overall feasibility. And to this end, I was accepted onto the board of the Inner Island Healthcare Foundation, as they agreed at the time to support me in the raising of funding to pay for a feasibility study, which is something that we all felt was really necessary to kind of forward our agenda a little bit. So we contracted with Healthcare Facilities Planning and Development to accomplish this study. And some exciting developments arose, including the opportunity to join the Association of Washington Public Health Districts in their own pursuit of solutions to many of the same issues that we faced in San Juan County. This also opened up the opportunity for the foundation to pay for several grants to be written and submitted, which includes the grant that I'm here to discuss today. All in all, the foundation raised close to $60,000 to initiate our efforts. So to recap, the grant that we've been awarded is $750,000 over the course of 3 years. And I'm going to get into a little bit more of the specifics of that in just a moment. The grant itself has several embedded components. So the summarized expected outcomes of this network that we're part of, which includes the Public Hospital District, Peace Health, Inner Island Healthcare Foundation, and a couple of other entities involved as well. But the summarized expected outcomes that we've established, number one would be collaboration. And that's about delivering our services to the most vulnerable, roughly 530 seniors in the county. This includes analysis of roles, challenges, outcomes, and strengths. Number two would be leadership and workforce. It's about delivering initial training to newly hired community health workers. volunteer senior community health workers and paramedics, which also volunteers that are placed. We do have a component of that as volunteers that will be placed on hold for immediate future, obviously during the COVID situation, but something that we'll obviously revisit and include ongoing education for years 2 and 3 of the grant. Number 3 on that would be improved outcomes. A large goal is to reduce the percentage of San Juan seniors reporting an inability to find and access services needed by 66% by year 3, to increase the percentage of seniors that self-report being safe at home by 50%, and reduce the percentage of seniors having to relocate off island due to a lack of supportive services by 50%. Also, this includes, it also includes to reduce the emergency department visit rate among San Juan seniors enrolled in Medicare by 10% by year 3. It's about reducing hospitalization rates among San Juan seniors enrolled in Medicare by 10% by year 3. It's about reducing diabetics with poor A1C control by 10% by year 3. And then number 4, it's about sustainability. It's about measuring and reducing by 10% each year the cost to Medicare of ambulance, emergency department visits, and hospitalizations in San Juan County to evaluate for inefficiencies. And it's about assessing program outcomes and sharing findings with community health systems, payers, and the Washington State Healthcare Authority. For the direct benefits of our county and seniors, our network is committed to realizing a sustainable regional care coordination system. And to this end, our network has intentionally created a specific and focused objective, sustainability, to ensure the ongoing sustainability of these programs. We've built into this grant the strategies and activities needed to identify and support sustainable revenue and funding sources that will allow this important project to continue even after this grant ends. To accomplish all of this, we've created a comprehensive work plan. I'm assuming, and I shouldn't assume, but that most of you, all of you have seen the work plan that's included in the grant.
Yeah, we've seen it.
Okay, so I won't bore you too much with the details on that then, but this includes, the work plan includes very specific and detailed strategies and activities designed to achieve each of our objectives. And our outcome measures detailed in this work plan will be an important part of our sustainability and focuses specifically on assessing and reporting on project progress and outcomes and modifying the program as necessary. Basically, where we're at in the process, and I there's a lot more that I can go into, but where we're kind of at in this process, since you all have mostly seen the work plan and kind of understand what this grant actually entails, really, of all of this, I'm probably most excited about the prospect of realizing reimbursements and payer sources. How can we establish programs that are financially sustainable for the future? And we'll be able to use this project as a pathway to leverage our resources and network partners to better negotiate those reimbursements and maximize our strengths. Our current directions right now today is to quickly form the necessary components in place. We are in the process of working to hire a hub care coordinator, with our interviews slated to start in the next week to 2 weeks. We have a small hiring committee that's been formed, and we'll begin that process with hiring as soon as we can possibly get it going. Contracts are in place right now. I do have a contract with Nathan and Pam for the project director position. I will also be finalizing contracts and forwarding contracts onto the legal team to review for a project consultant, Tiana Fallgotter, who is currently the Rural Program Manager for the Association of Washington Public Hospital Districts, and our quality consultant, Faith Jones, who is a Nurse Executive Advanced Board Certified. She is currently the Director of Care Coordination and Lean Consulting for a company called HealthTech S3. HealthTech S3 is a 48-year-old award-winning healthcare consulting and strategic hospital services firm based in Brentwood, Tennessee. And so Faith will be our quality consultant, who will also be part of our monthly meetings. The next real call to action for us right now, that I hope to have more information for you at the next meeting, will be our follow-up. Part of our work plan is that within 60 days of the grant starting, that we are required to basically go out and complete another survey. I don't know if you're familiar with the survey that we did as part of the feasibility survey process last year, where we sent out significant calls and surveys out to the vulnerable population, we'll be following up with additional questions and requests for information on that to help drive this project forward a little bit more. But that's, I just kind of wanted to give you guys a real quick update as to where we're at exactly right now, and that's kind of where we're in the process of doing.
Evan, since we're going to be talking today about giving about funding for paramedicine, how does this, or how can this, you know, because it's not completely sussed out yet, but how could this dovetail with paramedicine in the county?
So there's going to be some natural, I think, crossover. Part of the hub care coordinator position will be to really work, I think, closely with paramedicine and help. A lot of this grant really and truly is about training. It's about putting people in place, not only on our island, but on Orcas and Lopez as well. Part of the grant does call for us to hire part-time people to assist with the paramedicine programs on those islands. A lot of this is going to probably change, not a lot of it, but a portion of this, Gail, will change just based on the nature of the corona situation right now. The fact that the grant did lay out for us to hire or train up 10 kind of senior volunteers to be part of the paramedicine program or part of the outreach program. And so that's where some meetings will be taking place, and input from everybody will be really crucial in the next month or two as we look to kind of finalize the work plan and the workflow and see where things need to go.
So those community health workers aren't necessarily embedded in paramedicine. They might be, okay. They're not necessarily in the paramedicine programs. Okay.
Correct.
This is Trish. I was just curious, who is hiring the hub, doing the interviews for the hub care coordinator?
That would be myself as the project director. We have Beth Williams-Giger from Peace Health as part of the project lead. Rebecca Smith will be part of the project lead, and Nathan and or Pam will be part of that hiring committee as well.
And where is that job posted?
Yeah, we posted, this is Nathan. We posted that countywide in the Sound Publishing. We also posted on the Islander. It's in print and in online for the Sound Publishing. So that's the Islands Weekly, the Sounder, and the Journal. And this person will be an employee of the district since we're the financial manager, but it's going to be handled on a contract basis. So we basically have a chunk of money that's set aside for it and needs to cover all of the expenses of that employee. So Evan is the project manager, and he's leading on this, but he's been great about including everybody, and we're talking regularly, and we're figuring this out.
Is the job going to be posted outside of the county or just within the county?
You know, currently it's just within the county.
Okay.
So I hope that gave you guys a little bit of a clear kind of input into a little bit of what we're working on right now. It's a very exciting grant. There's a lot of components that go with it. It is definitely not all encompassing like I would have hoped as we originally started talking about improving the long-term care options on the island, but this is an amazing start. And it's going to give us really, truly phenomenal access to the state of Washington to reimbursement levels and really help us develop and fine-tune, I think, some long-standing plans that will continue to support the efforts as we continue to grow our long-term care options for this county. I think we all agree it's an amazing time in healthcare. As Peace Health has really embraced and implemented some of their technology aspects, I'm really excited to bring some of that to our county as well and broaden the horizons a little bit. And very exciting process.
That's great. Thank you, Evan. Does anyone else have anything else for Evan?
No, thanks for giving us an update. That's awesome.
Yep. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Evan.
So, hey, Evan, while you're here, let's ask a question. So we had thought that we would utilize a liaison system. We would send two of our commissioners, and you'd previously designated Gail and Trish for that purpose, that they would meet with Evan regularly and be his primary conduit, and then we'd have periodic reports to the board. That way he doesn't actually have to come every month. Does anybody have objections to that?
They're the long-term care committee. No, I think that's absolutely appropriate.
Evan, is that still where you're headed on this, or did you?
Yes. No, thank you so much for that, Nathan. We'll have some great communication as part of this process. I mean, everybody's working towards the same goal, and everybody wants to be transparent in this process. But I do think it would be better to really dive down deeper with the two representatives rather than doing this on a monthly basis. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, and we can meet, you know, with the entire board maybe quarterly or semi-annually or whatever that we end up needing to do. But we should try to keep the amount of time Evan has to spend updating people to a minimum and try to just use, you know, a couple commissioners for that purpose. So that was the plan. Okay.
Great. Well, thank you, Evan, and thanks to all our partners in this, the Inter Island Healthcare Foundation and everyone. We're really excited to see where this goes.
It is going to be a very exciting time. There's a lot of work ahead of us, but it all told is very exciting. And I know I keep saying that over and over again, but it is really and truly, I'm really delighted to be a part of this process. And I know that there's a lot of people that have been concerned about long-term care, and it's great to finally see it moving beyond just the talking about it stage, that we can actually put some boots on the ground and put some people out in the community to truly help the people that I see that are struggling on a daily basis. And it's fantastic. So thank you.
Thank you for your time. Okay.
Thank you, Evan.
Yeah, thank you so much. This will
thank you.
Move us on to audience participation. And Nathan, I'll let you manage this since you seem to be the one that can see who wants to talk and such. But to unmute yourself, just press *6.
And yeah, let's this is Nathan. I don't know how many people want to speak. I got a couple. I didn't get at least one person that wanted to. I want to get an idea of how many people want to speak first before we launch into it. So if you could just unmute yourself and say your name and that you'd like to speak, and then we'll just call on you in order if there's more than one or two people. Yeah, *6 is how you unmute yourself if you're on a phone. If you're in Teams, just hit the unmute button. For the commissioner's information, it looks like we have, I don't know, maybe 30, 35 people on tonight. It's hard to estimate. I'm not hearing anybody. If I not hear anybody, then I'll just go to the list to the one person that emailed me saying they wanted to address the board. Okay, Richard Grout had asked to address the board. Are you there? Richard Grout. Can you guys all hear me? Am I speaking into you guys able to hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll just give it a little more.
We have technological. I mean, we have another audience participation section later in the meeting. If we're having problems right now, hopefully they'll be resolved.
Yeah.
Give them another chance.
Just give them a little more. *6.
Can you unmute or *6?
Yeah, I think we're out of luck. I'm not seeing anybody coming up. So I suggest we go ahead and move forward, Chair Lindstrom.
Okay, well, maybe we can get that resolved by the next section. So thank you, everyone. So now we go on to our Public Hospital District number one operations report, which we are playing catch up from last month. So we have both July and August. Yes, July and August as usual. So I'll hand that over to you, Pam. Thank you. Oh, but you have to unmute yourself.
Oh, I had it unmuted, then unmuted during the audience. Okay, for July, we had receipts of $13,441.48, and that was all property tax revenues. And for the month of July, the property tax revenues were actually up 98% from the July of last year. And in July, for year to date, we are still running about 3% up. So far, the COVID has not kicked in to showing that we're having problems with our property taxes. But we keep a close eye on that every month. So for the end of July, our cash balance was $800,490.61. And for disbursements, we had $57,815.45 for accounts payable. And compared to July of 2019, we were 0.015% above the year before. So we're still running comparative to that. We had zero records requests in July. And that brings our total through July to four for 2020. And we've spent only about $500 of money on those particular records requests. And then I sent out to everyone the Eden reports, the revenue detail report, the monthly financial statement fund, the cash balance report, the expenditure report, and the outstanding warrants report. Can you hear me? I keep hearing something. Okay.
Yes.
For that, the only report that wasn't included this month was the Eden revenue and expenditure fund, which is like a kind of an income statement, the one that had the revenue on the top and then the expenditures. And it was a really nice, neat report that showed revenues and expenditures all in one. Eden is having some problem with that report, and it was giving a double balance in expenditures. So it they think maybe it might have to do with the county going to a biannual budget. So, you know, we're doing ours in a regular yearly budget, and they're on a biannual. But in the expenditures, when I ran it, it showed double. Everything was double for expenditures. The revenue side was fine. It was accurate. But the expenditures showed us being $2 million in the hole, in which that was not the case. So they're working on that. They have a work order in for that. And it also affected August. So I won't bore you with the same explanation when we get to August, but it did affect August also, but they're working on it. Anybody have any questions about the financials that were included? Nope. Okay. Operationally in July, when we went back to July, we are still paying close attention to the COVID, of course, and you can still get a lot of information from our county website if you tune into that. And we still in our county is running low. We haven't had any new cases since August 9th. So everyone's doing a great job on that. And I'm going to do this one-handed, just a sec. And in July, we did finish doing our mission, vision, and values, and we have that up on our websites. And we did clarify that it is a living document, a living thing, so we can take a look at those as we go. But they are there, and we did a lot of great work on that. And then, of course, we got the HRSA grant that Evan was just talking about in July. And that works out to, it's a little less than $250,000 a year for 3 years. It's $249,000 and some change. Why that's important to someone like me is that the HRSA, it's important because if you get a grant that's $750,000 or more, then you have to go through a separate audit for the grant. So we're just under the $750,000 with it being the $249,000 and change. Then we just do our regular reporting, and there's a lot of reporting in the grant, but we don't have to have a separate audit, like a separate audit team come to audit the grant. So that's one thing that's good about the grant. That's basically July catch up. Ready to go to August? Okay. All right. Okay, August, we had $10,482.38, and all of that was property tax revenues. And then we also added $2,147.18. They were leasehold tax, and the leasehold tax is doing quite well this year. It's way above what was budgeted. Property taxes, though, for August are down 1.8% from last July, so it has caught up a little bit to being a little bit low in August, but we are still running about 3.17% for our total taxes for the year, so it hasn't caught up for our total for 2020 yet. Ending cash balance for August is $809,166.66. And that was down from 2019 only by 0.13%. Disbursements in August looked really light. They were only $3,953.51 in accounts payable because we did not pay. Get in time the wages for Nathan and myself on that batch for the county. And so that made our year-to-date expenditures are about 0.78% lower than last year currently. We had one records request in August. It didn't cost us any money. It was just we could fill it right away, what they were asking for. So we're still at about $500 for expense for public records request as of the end of August. Same reports were given for August. The revenue detail report, the monthly financial, the cash fund balance, and the Eden expenditure status report and outstanding warrants, and then the warrant summary that shows you the and the expenditure portion down at the bottom. It does say 2020 budget at the bottom of it. After tonight, if the 2020 revised budget is approved, then the warrant summary at the bottom of it will say revised 2020 budget. So you'll know if the figures were posted by the county or not. Anybody have any questions about those financials? Nope. Okay. Operationally, we're still under Governor Inslee's orders to have our remote meetings. So I believe does that run through October 31st, Nathan, or is it October 1st?
keep having. I think it's currently running to the end of the September, and then they've been renewing it at the last minute. But I haven't checked recently to see if they decided to do it differently this month. It's just how they've been doing it for the last 6 months.
Yeah, they don't release it until right at the end of the period. So, but we're still under having our meetings remotely and following those protocols. Let's see. And as Evan told you, we've started having the long-term care meetings more for looking at the long-term care grant to get that in order. Public hospital district being the financial fiduciary for it, what we are in charge of and I'm in charge of is having the budget going through our hospital district budget and requesting the funds from HRSA, the drawdowns, and having that. So even though we have an amended budget up for the public hospital district, we'll have to do another amended budget next month as soon as we get those amounts so that can be included in our budgets. And operationally in August, we did last month vote 5-0 to clarify the chain of command, separate some of the administrative duties from operational management of EMS, and allow all the staff to participate in both San Juan Island EMS and non-San Juan Island EMS business. Superintendent Hutchins, myself, by law, as the CEO of the San Juan County Public Hospital District Number 1, and the board clarified the chain of command to this fact. And that was the end of August. Any questions?
No, thank you.
Okay, then that's it for the Public Hospital District July and August.
And we move on now to San Juan Island EMS operations report.
Yes, get that.
Yeah, and in the future, this is Nathan, in the future we'll do them together, but July and August were before you made your decision at the end of August. So this is the last of the old format, and we'll come up with an integrated format going forward.
Okay. In July, EMS had 114 runs and 598 of runs from January 1st through 2020 through the current reporting period for this July. There were 718 calls from January 1st, 2019 to July 31st. That should be 2020. Meaning that there were 120 fewer calls than during the same period last year. So there's been a 17% decrease of calls for EMS from last year to this year. The average number of responders per call was 2.8. Island Air had 24 of the calls. To the patients that went out, Airlift Northwest had 11, Life Flight had 1, and the Navy and Coast Guard both had 0. The monthly average shoot time, which is the time of the page to until the resource is rolling, was 2.11 minutes, and the average scene time was 21 minutes and 45 seconds. The monthly average response times, they all continued to be within that suburban benchmark. Overall, the average response time was 8.41, with 93% of the calls under 20 minutes, and 69% were under 10 minutes, which is the urban benchmark, is 10 minutes. In town, there were 86 calls, so 72% of our calls are in town. And the average response time was 7 minutes and 22 seconds, with 74% of those calls under 8. And when Mid-Island, we had 15 calls, which amounted to 13% of our calls. And the average response time was 11 minutes and 36 seconds, and 87% of those were under 20 minutes, and 13% were under 10 minutes. We didn't have any calls in South End in July, and for Outer Island, there was only one call, which was out of district, and it was with Shaw, with a response time of 41 minutes and 4 seconds. And those are just raw times. They're not extended wait times for Airlift Northwest if they have to wait for them, or arrival, or any of the simultaneous things that happens with an out of district call. All of these benchmarks are times per North Region EMS and Trauma Care Council, and all the standards comply with the state RCWs and the WACs. So that's a brief overview of the statistics that happened in July. And the next section is the financial review. And these numbers are taken from those same revenue and expense reports that I give you numbers off from the public hospital district side. The EMS gets the same reports for their information. They had revenue of $218,322. Cumulative January through July was $1,552,91, and that was 57.6% of the budget, where at July is at about 58% through the year. So we're about right on for the revenues. The expenses were $372,930, they were $1,807,633, which were 59.8%. So just a tiny bit higher than the average for July. We also had $300,000 we transferred to the reserve fund of 6512, it's also noted in the expenses, not in the revenue. And for the building bond, the balance stands at $716,443. So that's how much is outstanding on the EMS building. The GEMT money is down right now, probably because of COVID and some workings in on that. It's from January through July is $95,850, which is right now sitting at about 30% of our estimated budget, but we could get that in next month or the next month, or we just don't know with COVID and the other things that are going on. Cash and reserves, we have $1,492,694 for 6 months of average expenses. So that's good. The auditors like you to have, between 3 to 6, and we're on the heavy side. So that's good. And if you take the cash, the investments, and the reserves, we have $1,835,694. So that's a brief kind of overview of the financials, and you can find those numbers on those reports, which I have read off for you, and it's in your packets. Any questions on those? No. Okay. Operationally, we are still have a COVID response model, which was initiated in late March for in July. But we have some top volunteer responders by shifts to fill in for July. Were Trevor Bolton, Hella Koskorby, Dwight Colley, Brad Creasy, Herb Mason, Christine Bush in support, and Cher Ranke of support. So thank you for those people stepping up and having a lot of response for those. And we continue to maintain the policy of limiting access to the EMS building. It's still closed to the public, and we try to keep responders in coming in and following all the cleaning protocols and that sort of thing in the mask. The North Region EMS and Trauma Council, they continue to meet. They continue to meet remotely like most everyone else is doing. And the countywide CODAN radio system project, which was approved, they are starting to meet frequently, and they are meeting remotely also on that project. And for staff training, we have started having small group trainings. We can have up to five people in a meeting group, so they are starting to get together and do the small group training so that they can get their training requirements in and being more person to person, but also following the distance rules and things. So that is it. You have the rest of the reports and the graphs that show different responses and how many medical responses there were, trauma, cardiac, those things are in the back of the packet and are interesting to look at to see that. And there's a graph that really shows, kind of stands out, that we had that many town calls. It takes up, you know, like 3/4 of the graph is red, so it's town calls. So that is important to note also, that we do have a lot of town calls. You want to have any questions on July, back in July? No? Okay. August. EMS had 111 runs, 709 runs from January 1st through the end of August. There were 109 fewer calls than last year, so it's a 14% decrease still. Average number of responders per call were 2.56, and Island Air went down. They had 12 of the calls. Airlift Northwest had 13. Life Flight, Navy, and Coast Guard, they didn't have any calls for the month of August. The average scene time was 20 minutes and 54 seconds. And the average shoot time from time of page until resource rolling was 2 minutes and 5 seconds, which was a decrease. And overall, we still met the suburban benchmark, which is 20 minutes. Rural is 10 minutes. There were 78 calls from town, so 70%. So still a big majority of the calls are from town. Average response time, 7 minutes. 71% of those were under 8 minutes. And Mid-Island, we had 19 calls. North End, we had 9 calls. And the South End, we had 4 calls. And the Outer Island, we had 1 call inside the district. And all the average response times for all of them were definitely met the under 20 minutes. And with the South End, they were 100% of the calls under 20 minutes and 50% under 10. Any questions on those statistics? Financial review as of August, you got the same reports, the revenue reports, the expense reports, and they the revenue was $205,000, and it's $1,757,91 for the year. It's 65% of the budget projections, which compared to the year is about 66. So we are really close to that. And the expenses were $291,762. January through August was $2,099,395. Which is 68.8% of the budget. So just a little bit higher on the expenses than what the year shows. We still have that $300,000 that's sitting in the reserve fund. And GEMT is now $102,722, and it's now 33% of the budget projections. So we are at $1,408,933, or about 5.5 months of average expenses and investments. And with cash investments reserves, we're at $1,748,933. In operations, we still had Brad Creasy, Trevor Bolton, Hella Kaskorby, Kathleen Salinas, and John Salinas stepping up and filling a lot of incident volume for August. The North Region Trauma Council, EMS and Trauma Council are still meeting remotely, and the CODAN project is still meeting also. And EMS is still getting to have their small group trainings for their first Tuesdays. And then on the fourth Tuesday, Dr. Corsa, the medical program director, is still able to meet with the ALS providers and have run reviews with the entire agency, which they have been having really good turnout for those run reviews, and everyone is participating in that, and learning a lot from that. And then it has more of the graphs and the statistics divided up in that packet between the different kinds of calls, and you can see that on there. And that's my operations report for July and August for EMS. Do you have any questions?
This is Commissioner Loring. I've got a question. I noticed that the expenses are outpacing the revenue for EMS over the past couple of months. Is there anything we should attribute that to?
Well, the GMT money is not coming in as regularly as it did when we first were getting it. And then the calls have been down. They were down 17% and then basically 20%. So that revenue is down a little bit from the calls being down.
Additionally, revenue and expenditures don't come in the same order. We tend to get property taxes at certain times of year. Sure. And the same goes for expenditures. So we usually get, Pam, correct me if I'm wrong, don't we usually get a pretty big push on property taxes in October?
Yes, our two main pushes are the April and October, when everyone pays their their property taxes. And then as the months go out, we're at our lowest coming in September and March before the big ones start coming in.
Okay, thanks. I hadn't noticed the disparity at EMS in the revenue that way that I had with the public hospital district generally. And maybe that's just because other revenue is coming in the door that masks that change.
Mm-hmm. They've got more baskets. You know, the EMS has a lot more baskets of things. Mm-hmm. I think with COVID, you know, I mean, I filed my personal taxes in April and got my tax refund like 2 weeks ago. So it's, you know, it's one of those things where government offices, you know, not everyone's considered an essential employee. They're not necessarily handling the workload as consistently as they might normally do. So I don't think we have any real reason to be alarmed at this point.
If that's it, we could move on to unfinished business. Thank you, Pam. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So we have committee reports and discussions, and we have so many committees, so help me as I slog through these. Off-island transport, don't believe Everett and Kyle that there was a meeting. No.
That's correct. I'm not aware of one. I think I have no idea what generates a meeting or not, but they haven't been having it.
I think it's worth having in that just, you know, not necessarily talking about a proposed helipad or not, but off-island transport issues are complicated. And I think the smoke last week was a challenge, getting some patients off the island.
The off-island transport committee, my understanding, Everett, is that they stopped doing that during COVID. Like during COVID, everything came to a screeching halt except for COVID. But it's probably time to revisit that. And I know that there is a few outstanding issues. You know, a decision hasn't really been made on the helipad, and there hasn't, you know, to my knowledge, there's been no satisfactory resolution to the ground transport issue as an alternative to air. And that's something that they were talking about. We probably do need to start that up again and reach out to Peace Health and figure that out.
Yeah, I'll reach out to Peace Health. And they have the new CEO, Jack Estrada, and reach out with him and see if they're contemplating, you know, and when they might start that committee back up.
Great, thank you. The Community Collaboration Committee. Gail, did you attend a meeting recently?
I did. There was a meeting, I think it was a week and a half ago. And they did talk about, Beth Williams-Giger talked about the HRSA grant, sort of like Evan talked about it today, and what it would be providing and the steps that would be coming up. And then there was discussion about they have grant funds that they give out, small grants to different organizations, and they've given some to the Family Resource Center. What came up was support for families and stress, and Jennifer's going to apply for some funding for these stress management workshops that have been given to some providers, and they're thinking about having a parent stress management series to cope with different things, and also provider series that they may offer and get funding for. So that was kind of exciting. But I think mostly we were focused on the HRSA grant.
Okay, thank you. Also, Gail, the EMS and Trauma Care Council, was there anything to report?
Right, yes. There was a meeting, and they talked about being able to, Dr. Corsa has created protocols for different scenarios, and he had asked for some funding for formatting for that so people can easily use that. And so he got some funding for that. And they are, I think they're the trauma councils. This is harder without without Carl, because he translates all this stuff better than I do. But so there's grants that the trauma council offers for trainings. And so I think we have to get a grant application in. And so Lainey was talking about what that would look like, what kind of trainings we want to do this year, and applying for that grant by a certain time, because it was coming up in October, I think. So that was the discussion there.
Yeah, Lainey writes a lot of grants for us, and they're not always big grants, but they're, you know, every bit of money helps.
Right.
Thank you. Unmute myself.
And I'm going to take better notes in the future for both of those meetings, because I have to present that without any help, potentially. So.
And there wasn't anything beyond the CID, Kyle, I don't believe, since we met with our attorney last month.
I haven't heard of any updates. Do we have any Superintendent Hutchins or Mr. Butler, as far as you're aware?
We have no updates at this time.
No updates.
Okay. So the discussion is ongoing.
Yeah. I did talk to Fredman. And he is working with the Attorney General's office, and he'll get back to us when he has something.
Thank you. And then we have the finance committee, which is Everett and myself. And I think we've been talking about budgets a lot the last week, especially as we're working on our revised budgets for 2020, which we will be getting into later in the meeting. I did want to extend my thanks and best wishes to Heather Vogel, who is moving on and has done a really amazing job of organizing at EMS and creating systems that are going to set up the next person who is coming into her role. And we wish Heather the best. Thank you, Heather.
Yeah, I want to echo that too. We do appreciate everything Heather's done. Really do.
Yeah.
Yes, I would like to echo that too. She's done an amazing job of coming in and reorganizing and for the time that she's there.
I also appreciated that that whatever question you had, she had a very good answer for, and so she clearly was on top of everything with every time we met. Thank you, Heather.
And then we have the Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation and Long-Term Care. I suppose, Gail and Trish, that's just more about the HRSA grant than anything, and we've been hearing a lot about that today.
Well, we haven't heard anything about those meetings happening. Pam might know if that's going to happen in the near future.
Which thing was this again? Are you talking about the Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation and Long-Term Care Committee?
Correct.
Yes,
Yeah, that's kind of morphing into the HRSA grant committee, which, you know, the report from Evan broadly covers. We, Evan will basically be handling this project as project manager. And so Gail and Trish will need to liaise with him.
Okay.
And report back to our board. And of course, Pam will be involved in that as well.
Maybe change the name of that committee.
We can change the name if you want or not. It's up to you guys. That committee accomplished its purpose, right? And we got the HRSA grant, and now we're moving on to building long-term care with our partners, including them.
Yeah. Thank you. And then we've got the Community Relations Committee, which is Trish and myself. I feel like we've been a little bit busy on that front.
We have. We have met, we did a Zoom meeting with, I believe it was 6 volunteers, and that was on,
Yes.
The 13th. Yes, the 13th of September. And then we've had 2 Wednesdays where we've been outside of the EMS building to meet with membership, and have met with a number of volunteers. I would like to continue that dialogue. I'd love to have a committee of volunteers so that we could have perhaps really tighten that up and have a representation of the volunteers, and maybe two or three of the volunteers would commit to meeting with us and representing the group. So I'm not sure how to facilitate that, but I'm thinking that might work well. And I know we've got their letter on the agenda to talk about a little bit later, I think. Or is that now?
No, a little later.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to put that out there. So commissioners, if any of you want to share any information to Nathan or Pam, probably Pam, about, well, I guess we're going to talk about the letter later, so I'll just hold on that note.
We did also meet with some members of the public, some people that are like retired members of EMS, and I think we've had really productive conversations all around. I've learned a lot. It's really been nice to hear how similar our concerns all are. You know, we're all coming at it with the same concerns, and we're all on the same team. So I've really appreciated everyone's time and being able to take these opportunities to talk. I think that's, you know, communication is key here.
Yeah, so. It's been really important, and I've learned a lot as well. So, and I appreciate the time that all the volunteers have taken. I've had a number of phone calls too with volunteers. So, it's been good and important.
Yeah. So, if there's nothing further, I think that goes over our unfinished business. Unless there are any questions.